One of the things you said several years ago stuck with me. It was about how, and I'm paraphrasing with a haze of memory going through this, that, you know, there are stages to historical interpretation that you get sort of the battlefield histories, and then you get the political histories and economic histories, and then you get the histories of the losing side, and then you get the transnational histories. Is there a similar arc in how we appreciate and understand public monuments?
Yes, I think so. The late 20th century is different from earlier monuments, most of which have either a local or a regional or a national a reference. That it's obvious that the word "our monument" means our town, our state, our region, our nation. And the last, I'd say, since the 1990s, when the internet has made enormous strides in creating what has been called multi-directional space, monuments that can exist in different places and at different times. So recently, just recently, because of the internet, the concept of a transnational monument has spread, and it means that there are places where objects exist and other places where they are seen virtually on the web. But until the 1990s, the notion of commemoration had a what I would say a highly specific and relatively localized meaning, also the nation, localized character, and they frequently were paid for through local funds, so they became the voice of commemoration of a particular group. I think that's something of always believe that when we commemorate, the word itself means remembering together. The group that does it and does that work in public is identifiable because they have to take the time or the money to do that work and do nothing other than that. So there's an opportunity cost to commemorating which is local. I'd say very recently there have been transnational monuments, but the overwhelming majority are not.
So can we attribute at least part of the present and recent controversy and eruption of cancel culture about statues and monuments to the internet then, that they're seen more widely?
I think it's to the social consequences of the internet that groups of people in South Africa who got rid of the Cecil Rhodes statue communicate directly with people who don't like a statue of Theodore Roosevelt in New York or of Winston Churchill in London. There's a speed of exchange that has, as a consequence, a shared and in some sense outraged response of an immediate kind, which is because of the internet. This is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not an American phenomenon by any means alone, and there have been predecessors that are not American in the least that have a very established place in their national culture that most Americans don't know about. So I think the global phenomenon, what you call cancel culture, it might not quite be the right word for this, but the global phenomenon is a function of the internet.
So how long did it, if it's happening, if the reconsideration of public artifacts and art and indications of remembrance is so much faster now, did it used to have a lifespan before the internet? Was there a reconsideration?
Yes, indeed. The primary measure of the lifespan of any commemorative movement, either for or against, you know, wanting to commemorate something or wanting not to commemorate that in the way that it was commemorated, that was the space of a single lifetime, because individuals have to do the work of remembrance in public, and as I said, that means doing that work and not something else like earning a living or attending to children or taking in the harvest. So there's something what I would call life-sized about commemoration until the internet took over and turned it into a virtual activity. And movements almost always falter when people have other things to do. I remember very clearly reports in the press in 1914 when the Second International, the Socialist International, wanted to organize a mass demonstration and march against the outbreak of war. Well, the problem is there weren't enough days to organize it because most people have to earn a living, so they do their political work on the weekend. There weren't enough days to organize a major set of marches against the outbreak of war, and war came before the marches did. So have a look at the idea of commemoration as work. Those who, like me, I'm retired. I have the leisure to commemorate whenever I want. But if you have to go to work, and let's call COVID work, being virtually online work as well. When you have other obligations, that's an important barrier to participation in these events. So commemoration is something limited by the time availability and indeed the financial availability of people to do something other than earn a living.
Where do you think the present controversy about Wilson and Roosevelt and all of the Confederate figures is going to go, is going to end up in the U.S.?
Well, there's several different dimensions here. The first point that you might, this is a line from Arthur Danto, the old Columbia philosopher. Someone was around when I was an undergraduate at Columbia 50, 60 years ago, where he said basically that monuments are built so that we shall remember, and memorials are built so we shall never forget. The remember, the monument issue, let's say the Washington Monument, vertical, is a celebration, a bit like fireworks. Whereas memorials are different. Memorials press down. They're a meditation in stone about the evanescence of human life. And that distinction, which he developed in response to the controversy over the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in 1985, I think still stands. So the point, I think we will have memorials that will survive this current wave of political controversy, but it's the monuments that I think are going to be permanently, as it were, changed. Because monuments are celebrations in stone or meditations in stone of a particular values of things that are valuable. You see, very very few nations erect monuments to defeats. Most set up memorials to the dead, but monuments are about what we honor. Monuments are about heroes and triumphs, victories and conquests, and they're supposed to be part of life. So monuments, I believe, are now in the public crosshairs of controversy. They actually have been as well in that space of controversy, but now, partly because of the internet, partly because of Trump and other things, there seems to me to be an argument to be made that monuments now require what I would call a placing in time and space. And I, come right out with it. I'm not in favor of any monument being destroyed removed. What I am in favor of is placing in juxtaposition with monuments that honor the dishonorable, like slavery or the Confederate cause, placing in juxtaposition with it another monument or another statement saying why this was built at the time it was built, and letting people see that monuments are located in time and space, and therefore they're not eternal. The problem with when political rhetoric gets heated, people expect out of monuments more than they can deliver. They honor values, and sometimes those values change. Now, instead of destroying these statements honoring values. We need to say those values are no longer respected. Slavery is now universally recognized as an abomination, a crime against humanity. But in 1882, when this monument was set up, that view was not shared by a majority of Americans, or indeed the majority of anybody in the world. The same thing is true, let's say, for King Leopold in Belgium. You know, there was a time until the 1960s when being an imperialist or having an empire wasn't a crime. It was, shall we say, a political movement which justified itself by saying that we bring civilization to the downcast and all that, or those who don't have it, which almost always was untrue. But nonetheless, they believed it. Now, next to the statue in Brussels of Leopold, whose regime really was murderous in the Congo, why not put up a statue of a slave, or a statement about a slave, or some other object to work as a counter-monument, to act as an explanation of why they did it then and why we don't do it now? To remove it, I think, is a mistake, because it gives us a view that we're eternally true and they weren't, whereas someday our values are going to be put in, shall we say, question to the same degree as those who were slave owners are put into question. So I'm in favor of proliferating monuments, not destroying them.
Our another perhaps less precise way of saying that the monuments celebrate certain values is monuments celebrate a dominant culture. That is something that has been then trotted out by another couple of sources that I'm talking with for this story. Are we in the U.S. in a different place, more pluralistic, with a likelihood that there is going to be less of a complete white male dominant culture going forward, and will that save us from some of the traps that we're now encountering here?
I don't think so. I think the problem is that the whole of American history from the Revolution, well, no, before, from the Indian Wars through the Revolution on, has been marked by what I would call heroic warfare. Even in the Vietnam case, you could argue that the war is not honored, but the men who served and died are. So honorable warfare has been the cradle of American civilization, and it's still, to a degree, it still is with the war on terror. So my guess is it's not so much race as masculine warfare, which has been the problem in the commemoration or in the monuments that are so... so difficult. If you take someone like Stonewall Jackson or Robert E. Lee, they represent martial masculinity. They represent that the test of a man is being willing to lay down his life in war or in some armed conflict adjacent to war, you know, like the Alamo. And that, to me, strikes a chord in explaining why this is not going away if you simply multiply the number of statues. Let's say if you take the Massachusetts regiment of black men who were honored in Boston Common, and it's a very moving memorial with very specific black faces on it. It's still a monument to martial masculinity. And I think as long as the United States is a muscular military power and gets involved in wars in most parts of the world or any part of the world, I think this problem will exist. And putting black soldiers honoring, let's say, the fight against terror in Syria or in Afghanistan or in Iraq or wherever, it doesn't really matter, won't change it. If you can point to a monument that is dissociated from war, I think you have a chance to say that it's different. But most monuments, most memorials relate to loss of life. Memorials, but more particularly to loss of life. But monuments too, because Washington isn't there anymore. the monument to the murdered Jews of Europe in Berlin is obviously a mixture of what I call a monument and a memorial. It doesn't matter what word is used, but they're almost always about death. And unfortunately, the progress of American history has been war-driven. And wars are at the heart of the story. I give you one example. I helped out a little bit in the design of an individual whose design has been accepted as the First World War Memorial on the Mall. And I tried to talk to him about how we should honor the brotherhood of the soldiers, not necessarily their bravado, but their brotherhood, the way they help each other. I think he caught the idea, but still it's about being a man, which can be a woman as well, with the courage to stand up and call or answer the call when the military gets into action. And as long as that is a dominant domain of public remembrance, then I think this problem is going to exist, because over time, various wars will look worse than other ones. The Korean War is an example of one that has very little commemoration. And it's not just because it was barely a victory, if it indeed was that, but the wars of the period after the 1945 victory, after the Greatest Generation, if you will, are to a degree tainted by Vietnam. They're all the same. They're attempts to stop communism. But they don't look so good as the war against Hitler did. The same is true of the First World War. You know, Wilson is no longer the man whose name is honored in Princeton in the International Affairs School. That war effort by the United States was turned into a heroic tale, probably mistakenly. But why should American participation in the First World War be remembered, except that it reinforces the view that to be an American is to be prepared to carry a gun and defend the country when the country decides it needs defending? So I think your question ought to be qualified by saying memorials that involve violence and those who engage in violence are what the subject is about.
All right.
And when it's a different matter, Theodore Roosevelt certainly San Juan Hill, he was a man who believed in violence and was furious when the United States didn't join Britain in 1914. Then his views were tempered when his son was killed as a pilot in the French Air Force. I don't know if he ever recovered that. Same thing is true for Rudyard Kipling, whose son was lost in the Battle of Loos in 1915. The great poet of empire was really shaken by the loss of his son. But the fundamental issue is martial masculinity has been at the heart of the American story from the very beginning, meaning from the time of arrival, and all those Indian wars are as much a part of the history as the Second World War was. But the Second World War is the Greatest Generation. Indeed, that very phrase strikes me as bizarre, because it separates the people in the factories from the people who are engaged in fighting, and without the aircraft and the ships and the munitions and so on, none of the Greatest Generation would have had a chance. My question to you or to your listeners is the current controversy over monuments to violence, or is it over monuments to a certain kind of masculinity? And once we have a sense of the answer to both of them, I think we can progress in understanding the need to change the message of monuments by providing some degree of either contextualization or of rejection. We no longer believe in this and say why. We don't believe that somebody who is a slave owner should be honored in particular ways.